Welcome to Die Shrink, a supplemental gaming hardware podcast. I am your host, Solo Tom, and it's actually been quite a long time since I've done a solo mailbag episode, and considering the day after this is being recorded, Dan will be defending his thesis and then packing up his stuff in Massachusetts and moving here to Nashville to stay with me for a few months. Yep, that means that I'm announcing Dan may just be in more content over, you know, part of this year. I thought I'd give him this week as much of the time off as possible. Actually, you might have the next Broken Silicon News episode with him be recorded from his end in a hotel, which I think will be funny. But it is a crazy time for the channel. I'm building a new studio, just got painted. I'm moving into this house that has the studio with my girlfriend. Dan will be moving in. We got a house large enough to fit him in there for a while. And there's a lot going on. If you can't tell, I am tired. So I thought, let's just make this one simple. I know some people actually appreciate the more focused solo episodes as well. And because I don't even know what is the last time I did one a year ago, I thought the perfect week to do it is now. And I isolated some questions that I thought were more catered to me answering them, not Dan anyways, and so let's get into them. Totally not suspicious, white man writes in and asks, what was the most bogus claim made by any tech company you've seen? Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't remember everything AMD, Intel, NVIDIA, or Apple, or Xbox or Sony for that company, on that notion has made. I don't remember every claim they've made is what I meant to say. I mean, I'm sure there were some truly astounding ones made for like the PS3 and Xbox One. You know, I remember the Xbox One. I believe there was that guy, I think it was Don Matrick. Didn't he claim that because the Xbox One CPU was like 1.75 gigahertz instead of 1.6, that it was like 1.75? It was like 10%, 1.1 times 1.1 times 8 to the 8th power or something. And because of that, it was like 8 times better than the PS4 or something. That was certainly goofy. You know, and certainly I didn't like the Xbox Velocity architecture claims. I remember the PS3 had some pretty ridiculous claims about what the cell processor could do. But if we're talking about like the traditional ones we usually talk about, the big three, Intel, AMD, NVIDIA. Again, you know, there's plenty of things I could say AMD or NVIDIA said in the past, but really for me, the most bogus graphics card claim I remember, and that at least when I think about all of these things, I actually still have somewhat of an emotional reaction to, is the claims that Alchemist had a really good price performance and was bringing balance back to GPU pricing. To this day, that's one of the most annoying claims I've ever seen made in my life. I mean, it's the best you could argue about the A770 when it launched was that it was like 5 to 10% better price performance than like the most scalped 3060s. Certainly not the MSRP 3060, and certainly not the actual cards you'd be getting at the time, which would be like an RX 6600 or something. Yeah, that for me, that to this day, that's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my life. And it really annoys me that any website paid any credence to that whatsoever. So, all right. Bfish36 writes in and he says, hi, Tom. I had a thought around rising desktop GPU prices and NVIDIA pushing hard into AI. If top Strix Halo combines 4070 graphics performance, remember that's mobile 4070 performance or desktop 4060 Ti / 3060 Ti, overclock 3060 Ti performance. But if they combine that level of performance, basically PS5 performance and current desktop CPU performance into one package, doesn't that kind of make most desktop setups kind of redundant? At what point do you think laptops will make the desktop market just a super niche enthusiast or professional segment if they haven't already? Well, I mean, I just I think that's already kind of happening, though. Like, right? Like, I don't see Strix Halo changing it that much from what we're already seeing as an overall trend. And I don't think Strix Halo will be that cheap at first. So I still think you'll be way better off, you know, getting like an RX 7700 and a 7700 even, right? Even just like an R7 7700 together than getting some laptop if you want that level of performance or something. But, you know, eventually, over time, that might change a bit, but I don't know. Overall, I just look around and I go, over time, desktop is becoming that little bit more expensive because the teraflops can be used for more than just gaming. And I think more so than Strix Halo, in fact, Strix Point, you know, the 16 compute unit, RDNA 3.5 APU, that's the much more damaging thing to desktop, in my opinion. Because Strix Halo is, yes, bringing, like, mid-range desktop performance into ultra portable laptops, but it's still going to cost a lot. Strix Point won't necessarily. At first, of course, it will because it's new, but that's something that has much more pricing flexibility, right? And it can probably do 1080p 60. That to me is what accelerates this whole thing we're seeing of like desktop becoming more and more niche potentially, is not so much ultra cutting edge APUs that are as strong as a desktop so much as the lower end APUs hitting a minimum level of performance that even semi casuals don't care about anymore. Like already you see people using integrated graphics since really, I mean, you could argue before, but really since even Alder Lake to play most games. I mean, if Intel's drivers worked, a lot of people I think would just casually play a AAA game here and there with like Rembrandt or Alder Lake or Raptor Lake graphics or something. And those aren't even doing 1080p 60 stable. Once Strix Point is doing 1080p 60 stable, and so will Meteor Lake and all of that. You know, once we go from Meteor Lake, Strix Point, and what comes after Strix, and I don't mean the high end, I mean like the standard ones that you might be able to get like a $700 laptop, that's where I go. A lot of people, not just the casuals who play The Sims or something, but I mean like the people who even play the occasional AAA game will go, you mean to tell me this right here can play Horizon at 1080p 60 in medium settings? No, I mean, no, it can't do 1440p or certainly not 4K in most recent games, but it's at this minimum level of performance where you have to ask yourself, do I build the $2,000 desktop? Because they used to be like $800, but now it's $2,000. Do I build the $2,000 desktop to play in 4K when I can play the game comfortably now on an APU? A lot of people will say yes still. I don't think gaming desktops are going to die, but I think you'll see a segment of the market go, yeah, I don't know, an Xbox, PlayStation, or my laptop. It's just so different than before where APUs, like even the strong ones, you were fighting to do 900p 45. Now we're talking 1080p 60. That is what I think it is. That's what will erode that minimum level much more so than the expensive stuff, I think. That's my opinion on it. But I don't think desktop gamers are going to go anywhere, though, because there's a lot of disposable income out there. I think people will upgrade less often because it's more of a luxury. But you're still going to have a lot of people go, do I need a better car? It drives me from point A to point B. I'd like a $2,000 desktop. This is a hobby. So I don't think it's going anywhere. I just think that like minimum people, that's what's going to be eroded. All right. QH Freddy writes in and he says, I wanted to chime in with some random thoughts related to the last Die Shrink you recorded. I honestly feel like 1080p is so dead at this point. It's not even relevant for esports. Like, yeah, sure, if you are making a budget build with some old gen GPU, like a 5700 XT or 1080 or something, 1080p will probably be what you're going to be using. But having said that, 1440p monitors are basically matching 1080p monitors and refresh rates now, and GPUs are so hilariously powerful that even relatively demanding esports titles can be run at 1440p at high refresh rates. Not to mention that many of these games have a lot of long distance fighting where having a higher screen resolution actually does help. I agree. That's definitely a thing I've noticed, especially recently. Like What did I try? I have it next to me here. I was sent from AliExpress for an ad. You'll probably see in a week or so an RX 6400. You know, they gave me a list of things to test for the ad. And I was like, yeah, I don't have an RX 6400. I can always use another backup card, or Dan could, in case his GPU broke, so he can plug this in and use it. He only has two monitors, too, so that's not an issue for him. And I could play Battlefield 2042 in 1080p low fine. Actually, I don't even think I really needed dynamic res. I could just plop it in there, and I was just doing 1080p 60. But I noticed that it was harder to see people in these 128 player maps in the distance. And well, it's definitely playable, and I would settle for good 1080p or low 1440p settings in a gaming laptop with an APU, which Strix Point, of course, is going to be stronger than this graphics card, which is funny to think of. I do have to say that, yeah, 1080p for esports is starting to get a little absurd when everything, even this 64-bit 4GB card can play it, and it affects my ability to see people in the distance. So I kind of agree. And if you'll notice, QH Freddy, I benchmark 1080p because I think it's the minimum in some of my GPU reviews, but I really don't bother with much more than 4K because I just think you got to test 4K. I mean, even an RX 6700 XT is doing 4K medium, maybe with FSR quality mode on, in most games above 100 hertz. Like, we're talking, that's a mid-range card from 2 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, 2 years ago? Yeah, 2 years ago, 2021. So, actually, more than 2 years ago. So, I agree. I believe that paying too much attention to 1080p is starting to feel a little silly. It's starting to feel like it's not there yet, and it's still prevalent enough that I think it's worth testing next to the other resolutions. But it is starting to feel just a little bit to me like, what's the first card? Like, let me double check this because I don't want to get this wrong. But like, if I go to tech power up, yeah, so it's starting to feel a little bit like, you know, when tech power up with the Fury X benchmarked it at 900p. Like, why? Like the difference the difference between like a 960 and a Titan X Maxwell. It was like only double, or like 900p just seems silly to me. Like you're getting into only, everything's way underutilized at that point back then. And let me give you an example of what I mean. I go to Battlefield 4, which I played a lot back then. And then Battlefield 1, of course, on my Fury, I played a lot as well. 900p. Yeah, like, and they're cranking up AA and using Ultra. First of all, who's using Ultra and 900p? I mean, you had the 980 getting 120 frames cranked up to Ultra. No one would be doing that. And the Fury was just grossly underutilized. Yeah, the Fury lost to the 980 and 900p. It's like, are we really testing who wins in 1080p at a certain point here? I don't think we're quite there yet, QH Freddy, but I think we're getting close. I honestly do. I think it's worth testing for APUs and little 64-bit cards like this for the future, because that's just a real thing. But when we look into the 7970 versus the 4090, I go, who's buying these cards for 1080p? I agree. And I will say, though, if you are buying any of these high-end cards for high refresh rate 1080p, you better not be fucking buying Lovelace, because it just gets destroyed by RDNA architectures in 1080p, at least relative to the price you're paying. QH Freddy writes in again, and he says, low-end GPUs are dying, and that has meant the disappearance of 108 dies from Ampere in the Ada Lovelace lineups. However, in exchange, we now have 103 dies, which didn't exist before Turing. What gives? Why do you think that is? Well, I mean, the reason 108 dies are going the way of the dodo is because APUs are so strong, they don't really make any sense. And so the money is more and so in the high end now, especially in high end laptops. And if you think about it, the 103 dies for both Ampere and Lovelace are perfectly targeting the max of what you can basically fit in a standard high end laptop, which is to say it's about 350 to 450 millimeters squared. That's the limit. Like, we saw the 2080 proper 2080 go into laptops, and that's because its die size, I think, was 445 millimeters squared. Actually, there was Vega 56 laptops because the HBM packaging kind of made that 460 to 500 millimeters squared setup have a smaller footprint overall. And I think NVIDIA is just going, you know, instead of going like 600, you know, 500, 350, you know, 300, we should have the next die perfectly at that footprint to fit into laptops. And that's kind of the point of GA103. Because that's where all the money's at anyways. So that's why we're getting that and we're losing 108. Speaking of Vega, Technolads writes in and says, honestly, I'd like a new Vega. And I don't mean like Vega 56, 64, or that Radeon 7. I mean like the i5-8305G, the i7-8805G, and the i7-8809G with Vega 20 and 24 graphics, which performed like an RX 480 and yet only used 80 watts in an integrated SoC. That was awesome. What's happening to that stuff? My friend, it's called Strix Halo. That's what's happening to that stuff. And I, you know, it's a little surprising to me we didn't see them do something like that before now, but you're getting that with Strix Halo. The only thing Strix Halo does not do is give you HBM, but at the same time, it does have Infinity Cache, and it does have a 256-bit memory controller, so you don't need to waste footprint on the laptop putting a bunch of memory chips. It's actually kind of a better situation. You have the Infinity Cache making up any bandwidth issues, and then you can just have four RAM sticks and you're done. For an OEM, that's kind of a godsend, and this is really a better design, I'd argue, overall, for what those Vega G series were trying to accomplish. Or Vega, what was it? Vega GL or something like that, GH or something we're trying to accomplish. Florida Man writes in and he says, cost per frame graphs are an interesting way to approach value. Do you think in the future GPU cost per frame using recent titles would drop based on continued GPU performance improvements or increase based on game engine demands, like a bunch of Remnant 2 type games, or will things balance out and stay the same? So do I think future GPU cost per frame? So is value actually going to go backwards, relatively speaking? I don't know for sure. I think we're just in this. I think it's going to be both. If I had to guess, the average is going to get slightly better over the next 2 years, but that's because you'll have hardware unboxed averaging games that use Unreal Engine 4 still, or are an implementation of Unreal Engine 5 that isn't terrible, and they'll be getting 200 frames a second, you know? But then you'll have these other games that are terrible, and it's probably just going to seem about the same, but you'll be in this weird situation where just some games have more teething issues than others. That's actually what I would guess is going to happen over the next couple years, but then after that, it's going to just improve, you know, is what I would suggest. Resident Mexican writes in and says, hi, Tom, can you or have you talked to one of your contacts about if Infinity Cache can improve performance on APUs? I think it could be an interesting way to get around memory bandwidth bottlenecks, especially when using lower bandwidth DDR. Also, if Infinity Cache can improve performance, do you think that Microsoft or Sony would use Infinity Cache on APUs? Well, I've already leaked, I don't know if you missed it, that Strix Halo has Infinity Cache. But on top of that, I do have to point this out. The Xbox Series X and PS5 have more L2 cache per CU than desktop RDNA does. RDNA 1 and 2 did, should I say. And actually, Rembrandt APUs have extra L2 cache in the GPU as well. So you already see AMD trying to make the perfect balance of space cost and how to handle memory bandwidth. And the way they do that is they say, well, you have a bunch of DDR, so that's good, but it's low bandwidth. But if we added Infinity Cache that takes up more space, why don't we just give them more L2? You can see they've already done that for the PlayStation, Xbox, Rembrandt. So that's something I think a lot of people overlook, is that, well, there's not Infinity Cache on these APUs, but there will be on Strix Halo. They have more L2 to make up for it. Additionally, you know, when it comes to putting Infinity Cache specifically on a console, though, I don't know for sure if the PS5 Pro will or not. I don't remember. You know, maybe it's already out there. But what I would say is the reason they might not have as much Infinity Cache as a desktop high-end GPU, you know, if we're being honest here, there's much more of a balancing act in the consoles in capacity than there is on desktop. You know, you give a desktop GPU 16 gigabytes, that's kind of more than enough still for most games. So you might want to save money and just use a little more silicon in the Infinity cache. So you can just have 16 gigabytes of RAM. You're not throwing extra RAM at the issue that you didn't need. Like, arguably, NVIDIA kind of had to do with the 24 gigabyte 3090, where NVIDIA was in this awkward situation where they were like, well, do we give the 3080 12 gigabytes or 20? Right? That's a weird situation to be in. And AMD was like, well, you give it 16, give it a smaller bus, save money on that, and then you use Infinity Cache to make up for it. On the console, though, if you just give it 16 gigabytes, that's enough, but that's not, it's doing everything else. It's not just the VRAM, it's the everything RAM. And so, you know, if you, like, I think there's just a better argument on console that you go, yeah, we could give it Infinity Cache, but that's going to make the die bigger, and we really only want one configuration where that's partially disabled that everyone uses. That's the PS5. Why put Infinity Cache on there that will drive up cost and have us have more yielding considerations when we can just give it more L2, a bigger bus, and more RAM? It needs more RAM anyways, so let's just give it an extra big bus. That's the considerations in mind. That's why you haven't seen Infinity Cache on these consoles yet, because they need more RAM anyways, so they might as well have a bigger bus. You have a bigger bus, don't need Infinity Cache, but let's give them some extra L2 to make up for it. All right. Last question here, and I apologize if this is a shorter die shrink, but, you know, you got to understand what's going on here. There'll be another loose ends coming as well. Okay. QH Freddy writes in, and he says, are there concerns about accelerators being too proprietary and narrow in their applicability? How can hardware vendors convince software vendors that the accelerators will be around in the same form to support their programs in the future? How can hardware vendors convince end users that their accelerators won't be paperweights in a few years' time? Well, it really depends on the company and on the accelerator. And so if you're Intel, a lot of people I've talked to, and this was brought up by Wendell from Level 1 Techs, they look at this accelerators in Sapphire Rapids, and while undoubtedly some of Intel's customers will use them, a lot of Intel's customers are just going, yeah, well, we don't know if this is really something that we are going to use, and even if we do use it, is that going to mean we're locked to Intel forever? What happens if Intel keeps falling behind AMD? We just built all this software to use Intel accelerators that they're trying to charge us extra for to even use, and then we can never switch to, like, Venice or something from AMD? So yeah, they don't like that type of accelerator. However, a lot of the accelerators in, like, Genoa, and that will be in Bergamo, and there are a couple of the, I don't remember if it was the SDXI or SDCI or whatever the accelerators were. One of them isn't working perfectly in Genoa and will be fixed in Zen 5 Turin. They just work. They just do things for you. Most of them do without you having to program too much for them. So that's fine. These customers love accelerators that handle things more efficiently than just making the CPU do it for her, do everything. And if they don't have to do much to program for it, it's just kind of a thing it does. Good. Sounds good to me. But then if you're someone like Intel that has all this proprietary stuff, eh. And I think a lot of NVIDIA stuff is kind of in the middle there where, like, no, it basically just does stuff for you. You program it in a general way, put it on the GPU, and then these flow accelerators and stuff, well, you can program directly for them, they can just help as well. So, you know, and, you know, same with the PS5, really. Like, developers love the accelerators in the PS5, and I think it's the same story for the Xbox Series X, there's just less of them. They basically just do stuff. Like, Sony's done the work on the IO and the PS5 to just handle things that devs used to have to do manually. It just does it. Now, if you want to program to the metal on the accelerators, you'll get better gains. You'll get gains that makes the PS5 look stronger than it should be compared to comparable PC parts. But if you don't, you're still getting some of the gain. It's still easier to program because it handles stuff for you, and you're good. I mean, in fact, on that note, I heard, like, the PS5 even in the SDK technically lets devs check a box for basically, like, better than PS4 mode. In other words, if you wrote this game for the PS4 and PS4 Pro, it's going to perform, you know, at full clock speeds, wildly better. There's still a little bit of Q&A you have to do to make sure it's working on the PS5, but there's practically a box you can check that just makes it run, like, 4 times better or 6 times better than the PS4. But then, yeah, let me think about that. Then that runs, like, you know, 4 times better than the PS4 Pro instead of what would be 6 or 8 times better if you programmed to the metal. But I think a lot of launch games did that. So again, I'm just giving you examples here from PlayStation to NVIDIA to Intel to AMD, desktop stuff. I think vendors, generally speaking, like accelerators. Well, let's put it this way. They just make their life easier. It requires a little bit of programming, but it's not too much, and it makes their life a ton easier. They like it. Or if it does just does stuff now for them without ever having to touch the accelerator, then they love it. If they are required to pay a licensing fee for an accelerator their competition does not have, like Intel, they hate it. There's just a difference. All right. Well, I apologize for how short this die shrink was. It looks like I got through the questions a little faster than I thought I would, everybody. But, you know, it is what it is. This is a really, really busy week for me and for Dan. Dan's moving, I'm moving, and Dan's defending his thesis. And so I thought this was a good time for one of those shorter solo mailbags that I used to do multiple times a year. If there was ever a week to do it again this year, it's this one. So I appreciate it. Now, let me get to the patrons and read the boardroom members' names. These are, of course, the highest tier supporters on the Moore's Law is Dead Patreon. I, of course, thank them for their support at the highest levels. Brad Medlin, Drita Full, Z Jits, Aaron Close, Jan Rauner, Daniel High, GZ Ziggy, Brian Riggleman, MJB1, Sam Miller, Deke, SNES Chalmers, Jerem Ferreira, Falco Malev, Jensen Wang, Nathan Mose, Nicholas Buckner, Gregory S. Hacker, Zarcastro, Evan Dingle, Chris Rich, 3DSBoy08, Hal Buma, HardForum.com, Compressed Earthblocks, Shredbird, Dr. Forbin, Holden Mobley, Sammy Malas, Jordan Simkovic, Julian Leaked, The Boss Hoss, Roger Davies Cameron, The Eternal Dreamers, Nithra Zink, AWS Danny, Colin Tidards, Toka, Jamie Whitworth, Michael Sullivan, and Win Wang. And of course, thank you to all of you for your support, the continual evolution of this channel and really of my life. None of this could have happened without your long-term support. We've got so many cool things coming to the channel soon. So again, tell people about the Discord and the Patreon and the things you get if you support it. And otherwise, have a great weekend, everybody.